Welcome to Pacific Beer Chat. I'm Mike.
I'm Cam.
I'm Steve.
Warren.
I'm Carnell.
And Carnell is impatient, so hey. Carnell's got the beers for today, so he's going to let us know what he's going to be serving us.
Yeah, so recently I killed my blog, and I still wanted to write, so I wrote a little article for What's Brewing Magazine. That article was five breweries that define the decade. So looking at five breweries that started a trend that still sort of resonates today. So it wasn't the five best breweries, because everybody's been yelling at me for not having...
You're talking about the most impactful. 2010 and 2020.
That's right.
Are these locals? Sorry.
Yeah, locals. In Vancouver. Vancouver. So unfortunately, everybody was at me like, how could you miss Four Winds? Well, I'm sorry. Four Winds is a great brewery and deserves absolutely to be in the discussion of the best breweries in Vancouver. Over the past 10 years.
But you don't feel that they've been an impact over the past
10 years. No, no. So what I did pick, first one I did pick, opens up in 2012 as Parallel 49. I've got here with us, and I'll pass it around in a moment, which is Ruby Tears, formerly known as Gypsy Tears
originally.
Oldie but a goodie.
Red Ale. This isn't going to blow anyone's mind. But the reason Parallel 49 was on this list, and feel free to disagree with me here, maybe since most people probably had a Ruby Tears, maybe we could talk about if I'm wrong or right here. The reason I put them on the list was because when they came out, craft beer in Vancouver was still pretty nascent. In that we had a few breweries, people were starting to get around to them, but it was sort of the first big new brewery that people were aware of that was opening. They came in real hot. They had distribution, they had branding, but most importantly, they had this tasting room. Yeah. And that really shot them, I think, to prominence, was having a place where you could walk in, sit down, and have a beer.
And half the time stand up, because they didn't have a lot of seats
back
then.
It was pretty small, the first iteration.
Yeah.
They've done a really good job with the new room.
Yeah.
I mean, and as I say in the article, like, at first it was literally no different than like a tire shop waiting room. It was white, it had linoleum floors. The beer was free, though.
One of the owners at the time was pouring beer originally. I actually got surprised with this brewery from a friend that doesn't even like craft beer camping. She brought out a couple six packs.
Wow.
So, you know, they were big right off the get-go locally.
Yeah. Well, this brewery was always on my radar. Simply because the head brewer, Graham Wythe, was a member of the Vancouver Homebrew Club.
Yeah, Van Brewers.
Yeah, Van Brewers. And I was a part of Van Brewers when they first started up, so I already knew Graham.
And he's
I
good
knew
people.
What he was involved with. Yes, absolutely, him and Katie.
Yeah.
And I already was aware of him and his brewing abilities and his knowledge when he got hired by P49. So it was an easy thing for me to go down there and check out the beers and be a part of it.
Yeah.
And it sort of became the first destination, like, I'm going to a brewery.
Yep.
To drink beers.
They sort of established that East Van neighborhood.
Yeah. Totally. And the argument I make in the article, and it sounds like everyone agrees with me, unless someone...
No, I agree.
Is that, you know, you could open a brewery... people had opened breweries with tasting rooms before Parallel 49.
Yeah.
But after Parallel 49, you had to have a tasting room as part of your business plan. Mm. You did not open and become successful without having a good tasting room.
I hope Cole Harbor's listening.
Yes.
Oh, no. Cole Harbor's been trying for years. Oh. It's a money issue. They have another new owner, I think, now. And I think it's in the works again. They had another new part owner, and they have jettisoned them. And I think they have a new person involved again. So it's in the works again. But the problem is with Cole Harbor is in the basement of a building that faces onto an alleyway. And that doesn't work for the government. So they have to find a way to get access from the road, which is across the street from P49, but that's on a different level of the building.
Yeah.
So they're working on it, and they want to have it open. Whenever you mention it to them, they roll their eyes because they want to do it. It's just the money, right? It's just they got to do it.
Yeah.
It's like that episode of The Simpsons where they open the squid port, and Moe's opens up his new squid port bar, but it's really just one long corridor back to his actual bar. They just need to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into the Gypsy Tears, Ruby Tears now. Ruby sorry. Tears.
Now, since we're talking, just a minor plug. Just down the block from the current P49, in tasting room is Scandalicious Waffles. Damn good waffles.
Really?
Really good. The chicken and waffles particularly.
Oh. Mm. I don't understand that mix myself, but...
I didn't either until I tried these.
Oh, I've tried it. I don't get it.
Maple syrup.
All right, so I'm getting a lot of that malty, fruity goodness here.
Yeah.
Yeah, touch of sour fruit. Like,
it's a red ale for people that don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's been a long time since I've had this beer.
Yeah, it's been a while for me, too.
Personally, I love red ales, and I wish more... Like, I wish they were more popular.
It's much like brown ales, though. Yeah, like, they're well-made, and like, then no one likes them.
Red ales and brown ales are always, like, super fantastic to me, but they just don't catch on because they're not that, like, sexy new thing.
They're not an IPA. They're not an imperial something.
Yeah, but I'm with you. I want to see red and brown ales.
You've got the fruitiness. You got the maltiness. You got the nuttiness.
It's a better beer than I remember it being, to be quite
honest.
It's honestly pretty good.
And this beer was actually part of their initial launch. They launched with three beers. I think this is the only one that remains.
There was a Seed Spinner. Old Boy.
I went to Alibi Room and had the Seed Spinner, and it blew my mind. Went to the local BCL back in Coquitlam.
You know what? I remember that Seed Spinner was amazing.
They do it once in a while still, I think, at the tasting room.
It's seasonal, I think.
Only at the tasting room, if I remember right, though. I don't think they do it packaged anymore.
And do you guys remember the third?
Old Boy. It was Old Boy.
That's okay. Sorry. Four. Old Boy, absolutely correct. I love Old Boy.
They don't make much of that either now, unfortunately, because it was a brown ale, and brown ales don't sell. Adam Chapman, the former Camera Vancouver president, that was his favorite beer in Vancouver for a long time.
Really? Delicious. Old Boy was great.
Old Boy was actually my wife's favorite beer at Parallel 49.
There you go.
Like, when we were first dating, we went to Vancouver on, like, a Christmas date, and... got a growler fill of Old Boy because it was her favorite beer there.
Nice.
They didn't launch with a IPA.
Which I was going to say, that must have been one of their...
Now they do tons of them.
Yeah. Yeah. So they launched with Hopperazzi IPL, India Pale
Lager. IPL.
That's right. Which is also gone now. So I think the Ruby Tears is all that remains of that opening.
Really, eh?
At least in package. Yeah, at least in package.
Because I remember the 12 packs with... all four of those beers.
And then they finally came out with an IPA. They tried a couple seasonals, and I think they liked the one Lord of the Hops.
And then they got a cease and desist.
Cease and desist, which is like the most badass thing to do now, but I think at the time they were scared. Now you'd be like, if you got a cease and desist, you'd be like, Tolkien emailed us, man.
That's free.
The Tolkien estate is notoriously
The Tolkien son just passed away now, too, so who knows? They may not be as bad.
It'll be worse because the lawyers are on it now.
Actually, there's a new. I think there's a new TV show coming out for
Amazon.
Amazon Prime is doing a Lord of the Rings TV show.
Yeah, so they might get a little more litigious again.
But that's why they're called halflings in D&D and not hobbits.
Did halflings in Tolkien as well?
Yeah, but they didn't.
Oh, I think a lot of people... Well, it's how close do you get, right?
I think Red Racer, I think, actually did a brand.
Oh, that's right. No, that was actually a licensed thing.
Yeah.
That's right. They did a Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Just like with... Game of Thrones beers.
Yeah.
Before Game of Thrones beers were a thing, there was Lord of the Rings beers. Yeah. There was an American brewery that originally licensed it and then licensed it to Central City Red Racer for Canada.
Okay. Yeah, they basically like contracted it up.
Yeah. And I had versions of both, and unfortunately the American version was better.
Really?
The Central City actually just rebranded, I think, their lager for one of them instead of actually making the Imperial Pilsner or whatever it was.
Really?
It happens.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
So the next brewery on my list, I couldn't actually get a hold of the beer. I'll mention this one now while you guys are finishing off. The Ruby Tears was Yellow Dog. So the reason Yellow Dog was on this list, they opened up, I believe, in 2014.
Oh, my God. They've transformed the world of hazy IPAs in BC.
Yellow Dog?
Originally, yes.
Yellow Dog?
Originally.
Yeah. I'm thinking Twin Sails.
You're thinking Twin Sails. Twin Sails isn't on this list. Trendsetters, the people who set the trend.
Okay.
So Yellow Dog is on this list, and people gave me shit online for not putting Four Winds in this place. But I'll tell you why. So Four Winds has always had production and distribution as a big part of their business plan. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're out in what I would describe as the boonies. I know some people call it the suburbs.
That's reasonable.
But it's the friggin' boonies. It's... And distribution has always been a huge part of their model. Yeah. The tasting room was sort of an afterthought.
Not anymore. But...
Not anymore, but in the beginning. And I think they started around 2012 to...
Tripled.
Triple. Yeah. Okay. Whereas Yellow Dog comes along hot on the heels of basically Parallel 49, I think sees their success. I would argue probably pivoted just a little bit to make sure they had some sort of space. But they basically set the trend for a suburban brewery setting up, having a neighborhood tap room.
Mm-hmm.
And then more than that, the next piece of this puzzle is you have a place where people want to come and drink beer.
Mm-hmm.
That's accessible by transit, by walking.
Yeah.
That's near people where they live. You become the neighborhood brewery. And then they kill it with beer, right? They come out with Playdead IPA about 3 weeks or 4 weeks after they open. It's arguably the best IPA in BC at that point. Right head-to-head, right with Fat Tug, right off the bat. And then they go to BC Beer Awards a couple months later, and they win Best in Show with their Smoked Porter.
Yeah.
So they set the trend.
The other thing that you're missing, four-pack tall cans.
Mm-hmm.
Which, it was a new thing at the time,
Was a new locally. Thing. And I remember thinking it'd be an expensive failure because it cost so much to make the stickers. But that's why I don't own a brewery. But in any case, they set the mold, or they create the mold for the successful suburban neighborhood brewery.
Okay.
And we see it pop up again and again all over the place.
No, I literally just went to, last month, went to Yellow Dog to hang out with some friends who live in Port Moody because it's a great place to hang out.
Yeah. Right.
I think some of the other suburban breweries might do it better now.
That's
but
right.
But they definitely did it best at first.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
And I think, if you look at all of Brewers Row, they all followed that trend.
Yeah.
And they all sort of added their own little piece to it. I remember thinking Moody Ales, when they opened, took it way more seriously. Like, they put a lot of work into it. Didn't take away from necessarily what Yellow Dog was doing. Twin Sales, again, that was a big part of their business plan. And Parkside, obviously.
Well, they're all a bit different.
They all have their own identities. But they all are based on this idea of having a place where you sell a lot of your beer.
Yeah.
Because people want to be there. And I think if you look at Steel and Oak and New West and a lot of other places, too,
they all follow this.
Yeah, the North Vancouver breweries, all follows this idea.
Go to Brewers Row any weekend. Every single one of those breweries is going to be packed.
Yeah. I think the only thing that hurt Yellow Dog, when they opened up, they were basically a dog park on their back patio. But the health inspector, because you had to walk through the brew space, shut them down.
Yes.
And now the other three breweries on Brewers Row have patios out front where you can have your dog.
Have dogs.
Yeah. And they have Yellow Dog has this massive, wonderful patio with no access from anything but dogs. The brew space. So you can't bring your dogs there. Yes. My wife doesn't drink, and she used to love going to Yellow Dog because it was a friggin' dog park.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
So if you want to see dogs now, you're better off going to Moody or Parkside.
Yeah, and it's too bad. Or even Twin Sales on the patio, right? And it's just too bad because that was like a huge draw for them.
That was a big thing for Yellow Dog.
It was amazing.
It's in the name.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, with their expanded patio, they... they should have the ability, but because the alleyway between the two buildings is owned by the city, they would have to pay for a staff member at the one gate and the other gate to let people through.
They have found a small solution in the summertime where they open up their, what's it called, their front garage door.
Yeah.
And they reserve the seating at that little bar
That's right. Yeah. And I did meet a very cute little husky pup once there.
Yeah, whatever.
So that is a possibility. But it's just too bad because you get these fucking government organizations involved and they ruin everything.
And at Yellow Dog, they've got little curbs that are like built into the brewery so that the actual brewing area where the tanks are and everything is slightly elevated, and there's a walkway that goes down through the center. So the argument, I guess, is that these dogs are having to walk through this area to get to the back. But the way they've reconfigured it now, you wouldn't even have to walk through the brewery to get to the back picnic area.
Yeah.
You're walking through the tasting room.
Yeah.
Well, and not just that.
There's no production. There's no food items being created there. I don't understand what the argument is.
Well, not even that. After the hot side, where you boil things and anything would be killed, it's a sealed system.
Yes. So even if dogs were walking through the brewery, there's no chance that their presence is going to somehow affect the beer.
It's not like you're plating something that is post-hot side.
Yes.
It's crazy. But let's get into this next beer here, Carno.
Next beer, you guys are drinking the Daggerad Amber Ale. So Daggerad, we're 2014 now. As Yellow Dog.
Oh, yeah.
Great beers. The thing that makes Daggerad pretty special when you think about the sort of the history of beer or the scene in Vancouver is that before Daggerad comes along, people open breweries. They'd say, someone would say, hey, I'm opening a brewery, and you go, cool. And that was about it. Like, what beers are you going to make?
Well, what IPA are you making?
Yeah. Right.
Daggerad comes along, and they're inspired by this style. They're inspired by this place, this specific
Belgian-style beers.
Belgian-style beers. Yeah. And if you go on...
And it's a Daggerad...
Daggerad Platz from Belgium. Yeah. So if you go on their website, and I think it was intentional, was my guess. I've spoken to Ben a few times, but I've never spoken to him about this. But he explains the whole story, like the whole ethos of the brewery. In this really nicely produced, I mean, it's really a novella, the whole idea behind the brewery. And it was kind of touch and go. I remember thinking at the time, can a brewery survive making one style of beer?
Different Belgian beers, but yes, one Belgian style.
To call out your previous point, though,
a 3-seat tasting room?
Yeah.
6-seat.
No, it started as 3. It went to 6.
The government got involved.
It was pretty tiny.
But
and then they had a picnic table.
Yeah, they did.
Inside the production space.
Yeah. I love that.
Until.
Don't tell. Anytime someone came to the door, they locked the other one.
You didn't see anything.
But it really did change the way the market in Vancouver went, because it really sort of showed, I think, that Vancouver was becoming savvy enough to look out for breweries that made specific things.
Yeah.
And so they're a trendsetter in that they started out with this ethos and really powered their whole sort of production, gave them a name, gave them a story.
Yeah.
People could relate, hey, those flavors, that brewery.
Yeah.
And they've come away from that slightly, and they play with other flavors and they do things.
They've done some collaboration IPAs.
Yeah.
It's still central to them is that Belgian influence. And now...
If you want to know how successful Daggerad is, all you have to do is look at the results of the BC Beer Awards
and the Canadian Brewing Awards
in the Belgian category.
Yeah.
Well, they're I think they are the most winningest brewery in British Columbia now, if not Canada.
They took a sweep in 2019 of the Belgian category, which I'm sure they did the year before as well.
Which also, I think they swept for most awards from any brewery this year.
Right?
Or this current year.
They're tied with Strange Fellows.
So they clearly have a niche where they've settled and where they're killing it.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing to me is now you can't open a brewery, and you haven't really been able to open up a brewery since. And I'm sure there's exceptions to the rule, but I'm talking on the whole and generally here. You can't open a brewery now. You can't say, I'm opening up a brewery without someone else saying in the next breath, well, what's your style? What are you going to do? What kind?
What's your focus?
And that is the change that existed before and after Daggerad. It's very distinct.
Yeah. Well,
and it's clear.
When you're talking about Daggerad and their focus, the first thing that comes to my mind is Twin Sails.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the first year that they were in operation... Mm-hmm. When their focus was European,
German
pilsners, lagers, German styles.
And I didn't like Twin Sails when they opened.
Steel and Oak as well.
But I love them now.
I thought that was very courageous of them originally, having that focus and focusing on those clean styles.
Yeah.
And I used to go there specifically for those styles until a year in when they felt comfortable and they were making money and everything was cool and they were comfortable. And then they said to the brewers, what do you want to make? And then, everything changed.
It's funny because they went from my least favorite brewery on Brewers Row to my favorite on Brewers Row.
But at the same time, they had this plan or this idea or this ethos. And I remember explaining to people, is it always going to be German? Because I worked there at the time.
I loved it.
And we said, we might branch out into continental European styles. And then we did the dry hop Kolsch, and it was like, it's still a German style with a bit of a West Coast influence. Right.
Then you did
the Hopfenweizen in year one, which is sort of supposed to symbolize that transition.
Yeah. And what was that space whatever? Space Armadillo, and that changed
the game. That's when it blew up. That's when it blew up.
That's when they went, wait.
Yeah. But I mean... You
change the hops.
You have to do it. Like when I was writing my blog, I had a section on my website for all the Tri-City breweries for people who are new to the area and wanted to see. And one of the things, I tried to make it brief so it was easy to deal with, but one of the things I said was style. It was always one of the categories. In any case, I think it's pretty clear
that let's get back to
Daggerad
this
had a really lasting effect. But this is their Amber here, which is one of their core beginning beers. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the Bernabarian. It's a fantastic table beer. But this Amber is very similar. It's along the same lines, but it's a little more rounded, a little more sweeter. It's got a little more body, a little more flavor. It's just it's like Bernabarian kicked up a notch.
Yeah. It's got some nice sweetness, fruitiness,
definitely
it's a dark
fruitiness.
Fruit,
I'm getting like some pears and
toffee
that kind
or
of
something.
Thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really nice beer. I was actually told at some point, and I may have gotten this ass backwards because I'm no professional brewer, but I was told that Bernabarian, or one of these sort of three core beers, the way you had them set up and the way they were originally brewed was by design to propagate yeast for the others.
Yes.
So Bernabarian existed just to propagate yeast for
to
other
build
beers.
The yeast up for the double, which to build the yeast up for the triple,
which is just genius.
Wow. Very clever. But yeah, very cool beer, and it's distinctly Daggerad, at least in Vancouver.
Yeah, I don't think I've had a bad beer out of Daggerad.
No,
no.
What they're doing is amazing. They're doing really good things with bottle conditioned beers as well,
and their degrees series too.
Eight 10 degree. My god!
Yeah, 8 was pretty decent.
Eight's
as well.
Good too. Yeah,
and the fact that he's willing to just dump a whole tank of beer just because it didn't work out, or dump his bottles because
that's how real breweries work. Sierra Nevada's the same thing. If they get a lab report back that says the beer might go bad, guess what? It gets dumped.
Which is the way it
should
be.
And that's thousands and thousands of gallons.
Oh, yeah. It's not cheap.
That's
not
everyone
does it. That's the price you pay to not have a bad reputation.
You know?
For the record, so we know that, because I feel like the breweries that do that should get kudos. Like, I know Daggerad.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, Twin Sales does it. I know they do it fairly often because they talk about it all the time on, what's his name? Jordan Foss's podcast.
It's a pain in the ass.
Who else has
I'll
done
tell you
it?
Right
Anyone
now.
Know?
I'll tell you right now.
I know
now.
Ravens has dumped entire.
And it's a pain in the ass
before.
From a commercial
Excise
brewers.
You have to tell
you gotta
someone.
Call
you've got to account for it.
They got to come and watch you dump it. It has to be accounted for and everything. It's not fun.
No. So, I mean, it should be, for those listening, if you hear about your local brewery dumping beer,
good
that's,
on them.
That's, that's a reason to go visit them
again. That
means
they care
that's
about what they're selling.
More reason.
That's
to
thousands
them.
To tens of thousands of dollars flushed away, depending on how big they are.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
Well, by the time you take into account, labor and all the cost of the building and the facilities and
you got to pay a guy to dump that beer.
Oh yeah, it's crazy. It's way easier to just sell that beer. But guess what? If the beer sucks,
That's
why would
reputation.
You want to risk your reputation?
Yeah. Totally. That's all you have these days. Yeah. Okay, 2015. We've got a couple years, major years of brewery opening. I think at this point in Vancouver, we may have had years where up to 10, 15, 20 breweries were opening up. It really was that wild. More and more people are interested in beer. More and more people want to open breweries. More and more people brewing beer. But space is hard to come by. Cash is hard to come by. What do you do? Well, in 2015, we see Callister. Begin their process. They open up Callister, for those people who don't know, is an incredible concept.
Co-op brewery.
A small brewery. That's
basically how it
that's
works.
A co-op. So when I say small brewery, I think their system is, what, seven barrel?
If that.
It's pretty small.
It's pretty seven barrel. That might be the number. I remember it's something like seven. Yeah. And they run something like 6 or 8 fermenting tanks.
Yeah, it's not a lot.
About their batch size. I don't think they have to double. I think it's just one and in.
It's pretty small.
Their first couple of years, they had 4 breweries running out of it.
Yeah. And what they would do is, we have the owners of Callister. Callister is the brewery, and they hold the license, and the brewer is the brewer.
So there's the primary business, which
primary
is the
license.
Primary license, Chris and Diana are Callister. They get other breweries up to 3 or 4 per year. They come in, and there's a licensing fee. I think they charge, $15,000 a year or something for each of the individual breweries. And then you have to supply your own kegs and buy your own ingredients and that kind of thing. profits are shared and that kind of thing.
And one of your staff members has to work the tasting room as well.
Yeah, you have to work hours,
which is
on
awesome
because as well,
you can be drinking a beer at the bar.
Well, you usually are,
Callister.
Right? When they have three or four breweries in there, that usually means one of the people who's had a big part in making the beer is pouring your
beer. You can be sitting at the bar drinking a beer and talking about it to the guy that brewed it. Where else can you do that, really?
And it's
really small enough that the beer changes on a frequent schedule.
Yep.
They also do sodas now, too.
Is that right?
Yeah. A lot of breweries in the Valley are bringing in Callister soda.
I think Diana is the one that does the sodas.
Okay.
I was at Camp Brewing a week or two ago, and I saw the Callister truck outside dropping off soda. So
interesting.
So, yeah, it's there's nothing like it. Since
I think there's only actually two breweries currently, Callister and
Phillips.
Altitude and Callister Brewing at the brewery
at the moment right now. There's
there's some space there right now. Because Sundown went to Container.
Yep.
Okay.
And
Good Buddy went.
At the end of the day, if you look at their business plan and everything, I think as a brewer coming into that, it's not necessarily a sustainable long-term project, but it's a great idea for a new brewery who's starting up.
It's a good launch.
Who wants to get some kind of exposure and get their beers going and that kind of thing. Yeah. I think for a year or two, it could make sense for a new startup.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, like you said, Tin House was Good Buddy.
Well, there's been lots of other... Nathaniel Semp.
And that's my point entirely, is that's why Callister is such a trailblazer and important.
They've had some breweries coming out of there.
Because,
Boombox.
Superflux.
They are
nursery. Like, these are important breweries.
Yeah, they are the nursery to the scene at the moment, right?
Yeah. So I can see why that's on the list.
Yeah, and that's why we're drinking right now. We're drinking... I couldn't get any of the Callister on short notice, but we are drinking the Boombox Don't Call to Come Back. Boombox got their start. They were a year two brewery at Callister.
Yep.
Before that, Machine Ales, which would go on to become Superflux. Good Buddy Beer is now plying their trade.
Tin House. What was the cask one?
Sundown.
Real cask originally.
Real cask, yep.
Lightheart Brewing is an alumni.
Lightheart, which is now at Moody Ales. They're looking at doing their own thing.
And they put
out
brewers that have not necessarily gone out to create their own projects or continue their own projects, but have become important parts.
Andina Brewing.
The Andina Brewing head brewer was from Night Owl?
I think so, yeah.
So, yeah, it's incredible because it's an incubator. It's an incubator for good beer in the city, and it's left a really indelible mark.
And
who knows if
almost,
we would have had...
Almost every brewery that has come out of Callister has become massively popular. They're probably brewing out of another brewery still currently somewhere else.
Most of them. Yeah.
But, I mean, just talking these guys, Boombox and then Superflux.
Yeah.
Well, they're Boombox huge was on pretty the big success right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Right?
Boombox, was it Boombox Wednesdays? I remember going down for those. Those are fun.
So what beer was this?
So we're drinking Don't Call to Come Back, which is one of the ones they first brewed when they came back.
Yeah.
P49.
So
this looks like orange juice, basically. Yeah.
And it's a bit old, I think, but it's a great...
Super citrusy aroma.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things you notice between a good hazy beer and a not-so-good hazy beer is the better ones will have more shelf life.
I
think this one is a bit old.
But
it's still
could be a little bit. This is what I would call a juicy Northeast style IPA.
Yeah, definitely. It's a true juicy beer,
Yeah.
I think this one... Double IPA.
Yep. What's the ABV?
8%. 8%, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, but it's tropical, it's orange juice,
fruity,
it's sweet.
Fruity, citrusy, juicy. It's
there's not a lot of hop burn.
It's just a bit on the sweet side for me.
Yeah, I like that, though.
Yeah.
I like the sweet, too. I'm a big fan of the style, personally.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
Clearly they've done well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of the best moves that they did, because when they left Callister, they went to Dogwood for a little while, but then they moved to P49.
Yes.
And that has been a really good move for them.
P49 did their outside expansion there, where
they
put in more tanks and stuff like that, and that's when
they are now... P P49 and Central City Red Racer now go back and forth for the second largest brewery in BC,
really,
behind Phillips.
Wow.
Yeah. Phillips is double their size. Juggernaut. Though.
Phillips is bigger than Red Racer?
Phillips is almost twice as big.
And seriously? And they malt their own grain.
Well,
and
not all.
And they're
not all, but
and they also have a soda works that's everywhere in BC now.
Right, right.
Distillery.
Holy smokes, eh?
No, Phillips is way bigger than anyone expects.
Yeah.
I've only ever been in their original growler filling station. I've never been to their tasting room.
I've been to several iterations. I remember going to Phillips.
You can go to Ontario and get Blue Buck.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
So I remember visiting Phillips Brewery when they were in a small little warehouse unit on the east side of the inlet there or whatever in Victoria. Just up the street from the Save-On or whatever in this little industrial area. It was a one industrial unit in a strip thing or whatever. I think Matt was living in
the
loft.
Yeah.
And he was the delivery driver. He was the brewer. He was everything.
Yeah, it was back when it was Blue Truck.
His first iteration. Yeah. And I remember going in there to buy a t-shirt from him. Yeah. And on the back of the shirt, it said, "The liver is evil. It must be punished."
Yes. Yeah. Because I was going to UVic at the time that he had been open for about a year or two.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember
you were the one who killed the On Tap podcast.
Yeah. I remember going to a pub and they're like, "Oh yeah, like pitchers of Blue Buck or a Blue Truck at the time are all special." I was like, "I don't know what that is, but it's cheap, so I'll drink it." And I had my first sip and I was like, "What? What is this?"
Yeah, I remember having an experience with Blue Buck. Yeah, like it was Blue Buck when I got to it, but I was like, "Whoo!"
That is back the in the beer day. That got me into craft beer.
All right, so on this little journey down
memory lane,
yep,
or memory row, get it? Okay, so here's a bit of a fib, here's a bit of a lie. I said it was the most important breweries of the decade in Vancouver. How far are you?
Metro to Fraser.
Yeah. So you're talking Lower Mainland.
Lower Mainland, well, Fraser Valley, Metro Vancouver.
Listen, Metro Vancouver ends at Maple Ridge or Surrey, I think.
This is the Fraser Valley, bitch.
And we're in the Fraser Valley.
My home.
But it
my
affects
turf.
People in Vancouver. So 2016.
This was the year of the FOMO brewery.
We have Fieldhouse Brewing open up. And what they really, at that time, Vancouver had arguably surpassed Victoria in terms of quality and quantity, and I think
didn't take long.
You know, most people in Vancouver had stopped looking at other places in the province, and they just said, "We've got the scene; it's all about us.
Yep.
No need to worry about anyone else." 2016
Enter
happens.
Josh Vanderveen,
and I remember watching
bum bum bum.
Yeah, I remember watching their startup and laughing a little, like they're going to run a Vancouver style brewery in Abbotsford.
I remember talking to Josh at 12 Kings Pub and going,
"You think this is
going
to work?
That's going to work, yeah."
To quote Sonny Dollywall, Canadian comedian who I went to high school with, Abbotsford has two things, air show and Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
But then they open and they have
Jesus air
this
show.
Commitment to quality. Solid methods. There's great beer.
Yeah.
The ambience is great in there, too. It's a really well-designed place, given that their owner is a designer. I've given them shit over and over for having jars. I will not stop. I think place is much too nice to serve beer in a jar.
Their glassware sucks until you get into some of their more fancy beers, and they give you a really nice fancy glass.
But they got a great web page.
Oh, yeah.
They got a great everything.
The beer,
except
everything.
The jars.
Yeah, the jars just suck dick.
The design of everything is just...
It's top-notch, and it's got beer to match, and a lot of breweries you will see try and do this, come off real high concept, and then the beer doesn't match, and the whole thing falls apart. It doesn't at Fieldhouse.
Just the jars fall apart.
Just the bars. Jars, excuse me.
Some people like
hey,
to
you
take
can get a,
yeah.
You can get a 22-ounce pour.
Yeah.
It'll cost you $10, bucks, but you can get it.
In any case, yeah, the beer stands up, and I think the lasting thing for this brewery and what makes it important relative to the decade is that it reminds people in Vancouver that it's worth looking further afield to find your beer.
Sure.
And I think it sets people on that sort of outward look again. rather than looking inward. And I think we're still seeing that today. We've seen really the slowdown of breweries opening in Vancouver proper. Actually rarely happens in the last few years.
Container is one of the only ones.
It's all Container is what the first one in a couple of years to open in Vancouver.
It's all in the burbs otherwise.
Yeah. Now we see everything happening in the burbs, the valley, and the communities in
and
BC.
Beyond. And further beyond,
And I think if you want to look for a watershed moment for when that happens, that is when Fieldhouse opens.
Well, you're starting to see some pretty interesting things. In 2019, we saw Langley becoming the next Brewers Row. We saw the
over eight times as much space.
Yeah.
Well, sure. We saw the Courtney Comox Valley becoming this incredible mecca to visit when it comes to cider, beer, and spirits.
Yep.
And I mean, the last couple of years, just watching the Kootenays explode.
Right?
I mean, it's a
Nelson
big,
alone.
It's a huge
three
brewery
about, now.
Yeah,
it's the community focused brewery now.
Yeah, but I mean, like you go to the Kootenays. The destination for the Kootenays is there's almost as many breweries as there is hot springs.
Right.
Yeah.
Like you're going there. There's beautiful mountains. There's nature, and there happens to be a bunch of really good breweries and hot springs.
Let's talk about this beer. What is this?
So. Thank you very much, Cam. This
You're
is
a
Blackberry and Blueberry Dark Sour.
Blackberry and Blueberry Sour.
Originally part of the Dark Light series, this Dark as Dust Sour is back. Drenched in juicy local blueberries and deep purple blackberries.
Smells amazing.
We embrace the changing of the light and the moments that dust brings. Self-reflection, deep conversation, and crackling fires.
Oh.
Listen to that copy.
It smells like
that. Sounds like
it
bullshit.
Like berries.
What's
it
the
smells like
ABV
honey.
On that?
It's almost 10%. If I remember correctly.
Seriously? Come on.
The whole thing is completely well done. The beer, the branding, the copy, anything you want to look at, they've nailed it.
What's
it smells like berries and honey?
Percentage is 10%.
Oh fuck me!
Oh
right.
My lord!
And it is a beautiful and red color with a
everything
off,
about this
white
beer
white.
Screams. Don't put me in a jar.
If you want to talk Instagrammable beers and like,
oh my god, that's good.
Yeah, I have to admit that I don't like the aroma that much.
No,
is,
I'm with you.
It's got a little bit of that soured kind of funky aroma to it,
like bad yogurt aroma.
Yeah.
But don't get me wrong. Like,
but when you taste it. It's got that sour note there.
Yeah.
That tartness is there to go with it, too.
No, the flavor is
it
great.
Works.
Like, it's just berries and cherries.
It's like a strawberry jam that's been soured out a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's just one of those things that not every beer is going to have a great aroma, unfortunately. Okay. And, I mean, it'll lose points on aroma for sure. But this beer tastes great.
Yeah, and if if you're just drinking that and you don't know. And somebody says, oh, yeah, that's 10%.
You would have no idea.
No.
Yeah, it tastes like 6.
Yeah.
It doesn't even taste like 6, really.
Great beer. You guys had mentioned the explosion of breweries in the Kootenays and all over the place. And it's because of that. Or you mentioned that it's likely because of that concentration on the local community rather than distribution.
Yeah,
for sure.
Or the region. And I got to give credit to Dave, the editor of What's Brewing.
Yeah,
I sent him the article. He was into it. He helped me do some editing to make it work.
Yep.
And he said, what about Brassneck? And I said, yes, I love Brassneck. But what do you mean? And he reminded me that model. That model of the lemonade stand brewery where your model is to sell everything out of your brewery.
Not anymore, but
The majority, the lion's share. Yeah.
They don't really do any packaging. Everything's done through.
They do packaging in house now.
They do small packaging.
No, they do actually crawlers and cans now in house.
But you have to give credit to Brassneck to that idea.
Most
too.
Of their beer is being sold in pints.
Like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that's how they make. That's how they.
That's an interesting
by,
model, and you're going to make more profit off a pint than you will off a growler.
Oh God,
right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
it's not
and
even
you're
close.
You're going to make more profit off a growler than you will in a canned or bottled item.
Unfortunately, growlers are on the way out. I think
they
right
are.
Now.
They are. Yeah. People are tossing them aside. Unfortunately,
well, breweries can't control the quality either.
Yeah,
well,
I don't even like growler fills.
And the other part of it is the taxation side of things changed here. In the last few years. But I don't know. The growler as a package is an interesting thing, and we're seeing breweries now who are refusing to fill growlers.
Yep.
Which I don't think is Strathcona. A smart move, but I mean, I get that you want to have control over the product when people serve it.
I agree. It's probably not a smart move, but when was the last time you filled a growler?
It's been a while.
It's been probably a year for me.
No, I filled a growler probably late last summer. So like half a year. Six months ago or whatever.
How about you, Carno?
I'm trying to think. I think it was for my engagement party. 20 months ago.
Yeah.
Then it was like, let's clean them out.
Yeah. The only reason I've ever filled a growler in the last year is if it's homebrew and I want to share it with somebody.
I have the Growler Works U keg.
Yeah.
And if I can find a really good imperial beer, I'll fill it in the U keg, put it in the fridge, and I'll pour it over a couple weeks.
Sure.
But that's about it, right?
As somebody who has
worked, or Thor's hammer and a growler.
Somebody who's worked a tasting room. And you're the only person on staff, and you've got a bunch of people waiting in line to taste beers or do flights, and you've got to fill a growler.
Yeah.
That growler takes so much time.
There's only so many Ravens. Mm-hmm. It was Ravens, wasn't it?
It was Ravens that I was working at, yeah. Sorry. But, I mean, anybody, though, like, you only have so many staff that you can dedicate to growler fills versus pouring pints. Sure. And you're making more money on those pints, and you can pour them a lot faster. That's right.
And unfortunately, with a growler, I mean, it's teaching people about cleanliness. It's teaching them once it's opened, it's bad.
And I've heard crazy horror stories from people in tasting rooms about people bringing in their growlers, and they're like, can you fill this? And you take off the cap, and they look inside, and there's, like, stuff growing in there.
Yeah.
How do you expect us to put beer into this? Are you going to serve yourself dinner on a dirty plate? Before.
Some people do, though. That's the problem.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
How is that beer going to be any good when you get it home after you've had us pour it onto mold?
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy. No,
I've opened a growler before.
Please.
And it's just been like the whole tasting room has smelled like black mold.
Okay, everybody out there who owns a growler, please, the second it's empty, rinse it out. Yep.
Shake it out. Cold water.
Shake it
Doesn't have to be hot water. Just cold water's fine. Yeah. Just rinse it out. Shake it out. Yes. Give it a second.
That way, when you take it back to the brewery to be refilled again, they won't have to blow out all the mold and bullshit in there.
You know, and
your beer will taste good when you drink it.
If it's getting to the point where you get an aroma still in your glass, because it will, like enough hops in there, it's hard to get rid of that aroma.
Yeah.
OxyClean is your friend.
You
OxyClean rinses out clean, or if you have a brewing solution.
I'll use sanitizer from
Starsan or whatever.
Well, I don't even use Starsan anymore. I use better stuff that's more commercial. Yeah.
But I mean, even OxyClean, because it doesn't set up a lot, you can rinse it out and you get rid of it. Don't use soap because you'll never get rid of it.
So what I do with my growlers, personally, I rinse them out with hot water and clean them out so that they're nice and clean. And then I take a little tiny bit of sanitizing solution and I spritz it inside and put the cap on it.
Yeah.
Now there's that little tiny bit of fluid in there that's a sanitizing solution that's rolling around in there until I go to somewhere to fill it. They're going to spritz it and spray it out.
Yeah.
And it's going to be nice and clean when they fill it.
Yeah. But if you don't use that method, leave it dry. Leave the cap off.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you'll have mold.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I've seen, though, Old Yale sold the cleaning tablets.
Oh, yeah.
And if you came in with a dirty growler, they'd say, oh, we can't fill this.
Yep. But
for $5, we can give you a cleaning tablet. And the only time I've seen somebody come into Old Yale with dirty growlers, they've been like, oh, yeah, we'll get the cleaning tablets. And while we're waiting, we might as well get a pint.
Right.
And because they were
there and do its thing.
How much you want to bet that cleaning tablet is based like an OxyClean or something?
Oh, yeah. It wasn't $5
no.
either.
No. Oh, God, no. No, that's a convenience tax.
No, I think it was $5 for two of
them. The glass is $7.
You're a dummy for bringing a good dirty growler to us.
Oh, yeah. No, that's good business. Like, that's good business.
Oh, yeah, you can buy new growlers.
And yeah.
Or we can just, you know, new growlers, $10. Or we can sell you two of these tablets for $5, clean your growlers, and then you just stick around for a pint. And they're like, oh, yeah, that sounds fine. We'll try
you
some
beers. You can pay us to clean your growler, or we'll shame you in front of the entire room.
Basically.
Yeah. But we'll shame you in the back room for sure.
And it went from no sale to selling $40 worth of product.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Better than turning them away. I like that.
Yeah, two pints and two growler fills.
Yeah.
And two tablets that probably cost them a dollar.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That they sold for $5.
Maybe.
Good point.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's worth exploring those outside options.
Well,
we really went on a tangent.
We did.
I actually zoned out.
Okay. I'm going to go a little different with this one here. Instead of saying our favorite beer of this session, what about we go, which breweries did we do? We did P49, we did Boombox, we did Fieldhouse, and we did Daggerette. What is your favorite brewery of these beers? Not even like, you know, not the Haysbro, not this, but the best all-around brewery.
For me, it's Daggerette.
What's your favorite?
I mean, I think Daggerette, Warren's 100% correct to say Daggerette. Absolutely Daggerette. But I do have to say, and like, yeah, Haysbro. I love that beer, and it's beyond, or that style of beer.
Yeah. So you're talking Boombox right now.
I'm talking Boombox. It's beyond their technical ability. I shouldn't say technical ability because I think they're strong brewers too.
They're one of the better breweries in BC, even if they don't have their own location.
But I think there's something, you know, we get on the style because it's all about this hype or whatnot. But I think part of the hype, again, is that it's fleeting. It's ephemeral. It's an experience. And like, I think it's an experience that actually brings people together rather than pulls them apart. Sure. And our world needs a lot more of that.
Fuck yeah, it does.
So that's one of the things I love about it, is that it, you know, forces you to get up, go somewhere, do something, and talk to people.
Going back to your Boombox Wednesday thing.
Yeah.
I remember getting off work early,
mm-hmm.
driving out, like tweeting out, "Hey, Boombox Wednesday, I'm coming."
Yeah.
And three of my beer friends from Abbotsford were like, "Hey, pick me up a growler too, and I'll pay you if you bring them
back." Yeah, oh yeah.
And filling four growlers at Callister on a Wednesday afternoon and bringing them back, like stopping in Langley, stopping in Abbey, like Buddy from Chilliwack came out to pick it up. Like, and like, there's nothing
it's
like that anymore, really.
No, not
really. And I'd have to say, like, when it all started out, Steel and Oak, Daggerette, Twin Sails didn't do it for me. It just didn't work for me. But as it's gone on, Daggerette has just stamped their mark on the industry here. Steel and Oak has switched up what they're doing, and they've also, I think, in my opinion, made a stamp on the industry. Like, they're doing such great things. Twin Sails has completely pivoted from my least favorite on the row to probably my favorite on the row. You know, you can pick a style and do it really well. And I think when it comes down to Twin Sails, it's pivoted again because they've gone from just Haysbro, like hazy IPAs, to a lot of really crazy sour beers now. And they've done some really interesting Imperial Stouts.
Yep.
But Daggerette, even though they didn't really catch me at first, they've gone to be one of the most solid breweries in BC, I think, because
they've stayed true.
They've done some collaboration IPAs with Steel and Oak, especially their suburb series of IPAs they've done, but they've stayed true. They've done these really, really amazing Belgian-inspired beers.
Very well.
And some of their beers are better than the true Belgian styles. Not all of them, because like, their Belgian breweries have been doing them for hundreds of years or more, right?
Yeah.
But they've been doing some Belgian beers that are almost as good or better than some of the Belgian breweries.
Agreed.
It's just, it's beyond what should be available here, really, for the Belgian-style beers.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
we're lucky.
Yeah, we're lucky. Yeah. And, I mean, there's a reason why they're one of the most, or the most winningest breweries in BC right now.
Because they know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, Daggerette, anytime I see their beers pop up in a local store, I'm grabbing a bottle or a four pack or whatever it is.
You know,
if it's something new, or even if it's like, I just need an
I'll easy pick up a Burnaberry every now and then. Yeah, like, it's a great table beer.
10 degree any day.
If I don't know what to get, Burnaberry. Like,
easy. And you don't win awards for your staff, but sometimes you should, because their staff is friggin' epic. You're great.
You're right.
They're not only knowledgeable, because most breweries have been pretty good about hiring knowledgeable staff, but they're super friendly. They're super helpful. If you can give them an idea of what you like, they're going to definitely find you a beer you're going to like. Or if they don't have that beer, they'll try to find something that you're going to be interested in anyways, right?
Yeah.
They're super friendly. They're super helpful. There's not much bad you can say about Daggerette. Like, they're just a great
Amy
brewery.
Amy is the stuff.
Yes, she is. Yeah, big hearts for Amy. Yeah. All right. Well, let's finish this episode up then. So shout out to our Patreon supporters. You can go to patreon.com/Pacific Beer Chat. Yeah, we help increase our presence on the internet, increase our upgrade our equipment, and just make the show better. So shout out to our Patreon supporters, Steve and Indie Beer Show.
Yeah.
Cheers. Thanks for tuning in.
Cheers.
Chowda.
Thanks for tuning in to Pacific Beer Chat. We can be found on all podcast apps as well as at pacificbeerchat.com. If you find a podcast app we are missing on, let us know and we'll endeavor to fix that. Leave us a review on iTunes as it helps expose more people to the show. You can email us at feedback@pacificbeerchat.com. We can be found on all major social media apps at Pacific Beer Chat. Logo design was by Tim, the craft beer tourist. Audio editing done by Cam, known as Cam on Tap on Twitter. To play us out, here is a clip of the song Lothian by the band Conundrum, performed by Kevin Ems. Find them at conundrum-music.bandcamp.com. The song that plays us out is part of our intro.